is Over the Garden Gate, a program brought to you by the University of California Cooperative Extension Master Gardener Program of Tuolumne County. The mission of the UCCE Master Gardeners is to provide research-based gardening information to the public. If you would like to contact our Master Gardener Program, please call our hotline, which is area code 209-533-5912. The hotline is not manned full-time, but we do pick up our messages and we will get back to you within the week.
Hello everybody, this is Debbie Powell, the Master Gardener Coordinator for both Calaveras and Tuolumne Counties, and I'm back here at the office in San Andreas in Calaveras County. So lucky to talk again with Sue Mosbacher. She's always up to something fascinating and interesting. And Sue, it's great to see you again.
It's good to see you too.
And Sue, talking about that, we have a specific topic, and it's just fascinating. Maybe you can explain it a little bit, what your title is and
sure.
What this is all about.
Sure. So I'm the coordinator for the Master Food Preserver Program in Amador and Calaveras Counties. And one of the things that we find happening a lot is people will make a product and then they throw a lot of the food out. And, you know, you can compost a lot of it, but there's a lot of waste when you're preserving things. You peel your apples, you peel your, you know, you eat your watermelon rind or your watermelon, and you've got leftover things. And people don't realize that a lot of this stuff is edible, and a lot of it you can use in preserved foods. And so we put together a class called Waste Not, Want Not. And I'd like to talk to you about, you know, our favorite top 10 picks on ways to preserve scraps and use them in your meals or preserve them to use later on in the year.
So the top 10.
Top 10, yes.
So the most important is number one, but that will be at the very end.
And not necessarily most important.
Okay.
But maybe most popular. Or things that I like to do.
Oh.
I mean, I get to put my personal spin on here. These are some of my favorites.
Oh,
and we put together this list with a couple of other volunteers. But, you know, depending on what you like. And so there's the number one, there's a lot of different options.
Okay.
But number 10 is also fabulous. And all of them are delicious.
Ooh, well, I love delicious.
Yeah. And so if people are interested in getting more details and recipes and so forth, they can go to our website. And it's at ucanr.edu/MFPCS for Master Food Preservers, Central Sierra.
Now, just Sue, I have to admit that sometimes I don't remember those websites.
So, Master Food Preservers, Amador, Calaveras, and they'll find it.
So if you just Google that.
Yeah, Master Food Preservers, you'll find us.
Oh, good. So what is the top 10? What is the 10th item on your list? Or do you want to start from the first?
No, we'll go 10 down and work up to number one. We'll do a drum roll.
Okay.
So number 10, you can use either fresh or you can freeze things. But a lot of times if you go to a farmer's market and you buy beautiful carrots or you buy a lot of root vegetables, people will chop off the leaves and throw them away. But you can do a lot. You know, most of the root vegetable leaves are edible. And one of the things that I love, Candy Myers, who works with Angels Camp Farmers Markets, and she's one of our volunteers, when she came in for her training interview, we have people do a little demo, she made a carrot top chimichurri sauce for us. And so she took fresh carrot tops, and you can use it kind of like parsley. And she had some oregano and some cumin and paprika and all these beautiful spices, and then some olive oil and a little bit of white wine vinegar. She mixed it together, and we had a delicious chimichurri sauce.
And what would you put that over?
You could put it over fresh vegetables. You could use it over meats. There's all kinds of things you can do with it.
Oh, my gosh.
And if you have more, because it's very flavorful, bursting with flavor. And so if you have extra, one of the things you can do is you can pop it in an ice cube tray and freeze it so that when you want some later on, you take it out, you thaw it, and then you have the sauce already made.
I have to say, that is just brilliant.
It's really good, really good. And there's a lot of different recipes that you can use just cooking different greens in soups and sautéing them. I like to use Swiss chard in vegetable soup and meaty soups. But there's lots of things you can do with the edible tops.
I've heard about maybe the beets on carrots.
Mm-hmm.
that have you ever used those tops for anything?
I haven't, but I have recipes where you can,
where you can use the tops. That's wonderful.
Yep. Lots of things. And even I like to save leek tops.
Oh.
And I save all the greens, and I use those for number nine.
For number nine?
Number nine, yeah.
Okay, what's number nine?
is broth from all the scraps of your vegetables. Oh. Normally when somebody goes to make a broth, for a vegetable broth, for example, they'll bring out a batch of carrots, and they'll get celery and onions, and they chop it up, all this fresh fruit or fresh vegetables, and then they soak them in water, and they cook them, and they make a broth from that. But what I do is I have a bag in my freezer, and anytime I have carrots, I chop off the very ends, and I'll take my peels, and I put them in a bag in the freezer, and I save them. I've got my celery, I've got the tops, I use all the leaves, but any part that's, not perfect.
Right.
Onion skins, I save those, because that's what makes your broth turn.
I always throw those away.
I throw all of that in my freezer bag, get as much air out, and when I have a full gallon bag, I take that, and that's what I use to start my stock with. And so that way I keep the fresh, the whole vegetables, the quality vegetables.
Right.
That people want to eat, the pretty parts. And we just use those in our meals. And then all the odds and ends, that's what goes in the freezer bag. And I use that for my vegetable broth. And I'll also use it for meat broths. If we have a rotisserie chicken, I save those bones. And in my pantry, I've probably... I think I'm down to a dozen jars of ham broth, because at Easter we have a large family. We had two giant hams, and I made ham broth. I
had
I made ham broth, and after Thanksgiving I make turkey broth.
So would you add the ham broth into maybe if you're making a batch of beans? Or
I use it in beans. I use it in couscous. I use it with rice. I use it with soups. I use it with anything.
Oh, you mean you're cooking the rice in the broth. Right,
Yep.
So
you can
makes
do
it
potatoes.
Even tastier. That's a great idea.
And with all of those, you can freeze the bones until you're ready to use it, and then you can throw in some of the bits and pieces of your vegetable scraps, and away you go. The thing I'm still trying to figure out, though, is on all the recipes they say, after you've cooked the broth, discard the vegetables, because, they've pretty soggy, but I'm thinking there's got to be something you can do with it, because maybe you could puree those to put in a pureed soup. There's going to still be some flavor left to them. So that's one of my next projects, is to figure out what am I going to do, because I have to make another batch of broth.
Well, let us know.
Yep. Yep.
So what about number eight?
Oh, eight is making homemade pectin from apple scraps. Because, and so if you have Granny Smith apples.
Can I stop you right there?
Yes.
What is pectin?
What is pectin? Pectin is a substance that you use to gel jellies. And most of the time it comes from either very tart apples, or it's ground from the peels of oranges. So when you peel an orange, the orange peel has a lot of pectin in it, and it's what gives plants their structure. If a tree didn't have pectin in its cellular walls, it would grow along the ground. It doesn't have the up and down structure. And so what the pectin does when you add it with sugar for full sugar jams and jellies, that's what gives it the gel. Otherwise, the jelly would just be a syrup, and it would fall off your spoon.
Because normally, in the past, years ago, when I've made jams or jellies, I have to buy pectin.
You can, or you can make your own. If you've got a lot of apple scraps, and primarily you want to use either crab apples or Granny Smith, really tart apples that have high pectin, we have a recipe from, it's the Oregon State University, and it has the recommendations. And so you want to use tart cooking apples that are slightly underripe. Or some crab apples. And then you take, you're making applesauce, for example. You peel them, you core them, you save all that stuff that you would normally compost, or in my case, give to our dog. He's my mammalian composter. So you save all those the tart apple scraps, and then you boil it down. And from there, you extract the juice and you cook it down. And so you have a very pectin-full
gosh.
Basically, you make a liquid pectin.
Right. That's great. That really
it's a great
is.
Way to use your scraps, especially if you have access to a lot of apples.
And then how would you store that pectin? What would you
In liquid, and you can actually, you can can it.
You freeze it, maybe?
You need to keep it in a cool, dry, dark place, so I wouldn't freeze it.
Okay.
Yeah, but then you refrigerate it after you open it, and you put it in a little small container.
Okay.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a great use for it.
Yes, great advice.
And if you don't want to use it for pectin, number 7.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
Number 7. Is it number better 7. Than pectin?
I think so, because you can eat it right from the jar.
Ooh.
And so it's the name is a little deceptive. It's a fruit honey that you make from scraps. And so it's not, doesn't have honey in it, but it has the consistency of honey. So if you take apple peels or pear peels, you basically cook all the peels and the scraps down until you have the juice, and you strain out the juice, and then you simmer it until a lot of the liquid evaporates, and then you have a thicker jelly, and it also you cook it down until it has the consistency of honey.
Wow.
Put that on your waffles or your pancakes.
Do you have to add anything to it to give it that kind of consistency, or is it just literally the cooking? And there's
you put some sugar in it too, so it's like a fruit syrup.
But it will get that consistency where it's that very thick kind of sticky type of substance.
Yeah, it looks like honey. And it's just a sweet syrup or a sweet fruit.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that's something else you can do if you have a lot of scraps, especially if you have a pear tree, because pears canned are wonderful. But you take the peels off. And so this way you have a use for those peels.
Right.
Because you may not want to have all of your pear peels in the compost pile, and the worms may get tired of them.
Oh,
and so
that's
you can make
true.
Make a fruit,
so you can
fruit
make
honey.
Mm-hmm. Fruit honey. That's the first time I've heard of that.
Yeah. You can make it out of peaches. So if you can peaches, you've got your peach peels. And so
you can have different colors of honey.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the fruit honey.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Now, what is your next item?
The next one... some people may have heard of it, but when you have watermelon, you take the rinds, and you don't have to get rid of them. You can either pickle the rinds, or you can dehydrate them and candy them and make watermelon rind chips. And so those are delicious.
Oh, my gosh.
Mm-hmm. You make
I don't think I've ever had one.
I'll have to bring you some, because I have
Please
some.
Please do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And if you grow your own, seeded watermelon has a thicker rind, and so that works very well with candied or with watermelon rind pickles. And then the seedless watermelon, it has a thinner rind, and so you would use that to make candied watermelon rind chips. And so what you do with both of them is you to cut off most of the pink flesh, and then you cut off the outer green, so you have just the white rind, and then you cut into chunks, and then you cook it in a sugar syrup so that it becomes basically translucent, so it's very clear, and it's tender throughout, and you have a little bit of the sugar in there.
Okay.
And then you either pickle them or you dry them. And with the candied watermelon chips, you dry them till they're still a little bit chewy, but they have a little crunch. And I like to throw different spices in there. I like cloves. So I throw whole spices in the syrup when you're cooking them.
Mm-hmm.
So when you bite them, you get that little burst of seasoning
right.
as well. But they're great to munch on. And it's a good way to use up your watermelon.
I've never heard of this.
I learned of this from one of the volunteers in the Sacramento office, and my husband loves watermelon. He can go through an entire watermelon in 2 days.
I do, too.
So I have a lot of rind.
What a great use.
Yeah. And, you know, it's normally something you would consider garbage, and you can make delicious edible food out of it.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to have to try it. It sounds so intriguing.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's good.
Does it get better from here? Or is there more?
There's another thing that people consider garbage. It's a throwaway is corn cobs. And I've talked about it a little bit on the show before. But if you take corn cobs, and not the kind that you've slobbered with salt and butter on, but if you cook your corn, either roast it or boil it, and then cut all the kernels off, you save the cobs, and then you boil them. And if you get about a dozen cobs, and you can freeze them until you have enough, the natural sweetness from the cobs comes out into the juice. You strain it off so you have corn cob juice.
Okay.
You mix that with sugar and pectin so that it gels. And amazingly, the resulting jelly tastes like honey. It's delicious. We do tastings with kids and they are always cocky. I know what this is. It's honey. It's like, no, it's not.
Does it look like honey?
It is, because I use sweet corn and yellow corn, and so it's a pretty gold.
Oh.
The recipe on the National Center for Home Food Preservation calls for red field corn, but I don't have that. So I use maybe it's red if you use that, but I've used it with white corn, sweet yellow corn, and it's a beautiful gold.
I highly recommend that.
Save your corn cobs.
Mm-hmm. Oh, gosh, I'm going to be saving everything before you know it.
You have to buy a bigger freezer.
I am.
Yeah. Well, with the freezer, because I put a lot of things in the freezer until I'm ready to work with them. And one of the things I like to do is I get the clear plastic freezer or egg cartons. And then I also have some different ice cube trays, and I like to put things in there in little amounts. And so if I am making a dish and it calls for, you know, half a cup of a diced celery, and I cut up a couple of them, and I've got, you know, an extra third of a cup or whatever, I'll take a separate pan and I'll saute my extra onions and carrots and celery, and then I'll mix it with in some butter or some oil, and then I will put those in a freezer, a little freezer tray, the ice cube tray, or the egg carton.
Sure.
And so then later on when I need to have some onions, carrots, celery, whatever, I can take that out, thaw it, and I can saute it, and I'm ready to go.
That is wonderful.
If I have extra herbs, I can chop them up, put them in butter, and freeze that. So I have an herb butter that's ready to go. But there's lots of things you can take and just freeze little bits in the oil or butters.
I mean, it's very... how do I say this? But you're saving a lot of money.
Yes. And you're creating flavor.
You're making things that are, I mean, they just absolutely sound wonderful.
Waste not, want not. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think somebody famous said that originally.
Probably a lot of people have. Yep. Yeah.
So what's after your...
So we're up to number 3. And so,
oh my goodness.
I tend to put things in the freezer, and I should practice what I preach and make sure I rotate things and use them. But every once in a while, I'll find a baggie of frozen berries in the back that, you know, getting kind of old. And so one of the things that I like to do is make flavored vinegars, because you can take plain white vinegar. I like to use a lot of white wine vinegar because it has a nicer flavor. And then you just soak... because I have blackberries on our property, so I have bags of blackberries.
Okay.
And so I'll take a handful of blackberries, put them in the vinegar, and you let it sit for 3 weeks in a cool, dry, dark place, and the vinegar just absorbs the color and the flavor of the berries.
Wow.
Then you strain out your berries, and you have a blackberry vinegar. You can pay $8 for a jar in the grocery store. You make your own.
Oh, my gosh. Yep. That's great. Now, do you need a special jar to...
You just have to sterilize it to start with.
You have to sterilize the jar. Mm-hmm. So it could be any kind of jar?
Any jar. I save all kinds of jars.
Okay.
And then I can put it in there, and it's something you can
and
give as gifts.
And then just label it.
Label it.
I didn't even think about that.
You
can give it as gifts.
Yeah.
Because, like you said, flavored... flavored vinegars are... Mm-hmm. Little bit pricey. Yeah.
And you can make your own mixtures. You can actually can them if you want, or keep them in the refrigerator. They don't have to be frozen, but if you keep them in the refrigerator, the flavor lasts a little bit longer.
Okay.
And when I give them away, I like to give them in small jars, because people usually aren't going to eat a quart of flavored vinegar at a time. Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah. But you can do it with leftover herbs as well. So there's lots of things, lots of flavored vinegars that you can make.
Oh,
and they're
easy.
It's
well, you make it sound easy.
I mean, if you can follow a recipe, you can make it.
So far, it seems pretty easy.
Yeah. And then we're down to the top two. And so, since it's winter time, I'm going to save the top one for a winter product. But the top two for me is the tomatoes. We already talked about freezing tomatoes. I think we did in this one.
A little bit.
Okay.
Well, actually, I talked about it a little bit because I got that tip from you before about cherry tomatoes.
Yeah.
So we talked, and you've got me now freezing my cherry tomatoes because it was so easy, but you can freeze the rest of the tomatoes?
Yeah, so you can take an entire tomato, because a lot of times in the summertime, people have a bumper crop. You come home for the weekend, being away for the weekend, and all of a sudden the tomatoes have gone crazy. And you can't can them, you can't eat them fast enough, and a lot of them go to waste. And sometimes people think that they have to core and cut all the tomatoes to freeze them. No, you just Rinse them off, make sure they're dry, put them in a freezer bag, get as much air out as possible, throw those puppies in the freezer and you're good to go. Wow. And then when you take them out, you can chop them up when they're still slightly mm-hmm. frozen, so they're thick and easy to chop. And then you can saute them. If you want to make canned products, then you can. But one of the cool things is you can take those frozen tomatoes, and when you run them under warm water, the skins will come off.
Oh my gosh.
Kind of like how normally you dip a fresh tomato in boiling water and the skins come off.
Right.
So the skins come off. Well, save those skins, because you can take those skins and you can dehydrate them with some salt, garlic, whatever spices you like, and you can have a flavored tomato chip. Mm. Or you dehydrate them until they're crispy and you can grind them up and you can have a tomato powder. If you've got some tomatoes that are kind of funky looking, you know, that are getting kind of overripe and are soft, you can puree them and dry them into a tomato leather and then till they're crispy, and then grind those up as well so you can have a tomato powder. And then you can throw that in soups and stews to add some extra tomato flavor. If you need a tablespoon of tomato paste, you can make a tablespoon of tomato paste.
Wow.
If you want to take some, make your own mixture for tomato soup with fresh herbs, and you can take it camping or backpacking, mix some boiling water and you've got instant soup. There's all kinds of things you can do with tomato powder.
Oh my gosh. That is amazing. Mm-hmm. That really is.
Yeah.
I'm sold.
Good.
Be saving my other tomatoes.
Save your skins. Yep. Save those tomato skins. Yep.
And so what is, now you've got me so curious, what is the top
the number one?
The number one. What is that?
Citrus rinds. People, if you have orange, fresh oranges, you make orange juice, you juice the orange and you throw the rinds away. You have mandarin oranges, all those, you peel them and then you throw the peels away.
Right.
So one of the things you can do, there's always traditional preserved lemons where you actually preserve the lemon peels and the whole lemon with salt and lemon juice, and you can use that. I've got a recipe that I haven't tried yet. I'm excited about. It's an ice cream with preserved lemons. And so you have the sweet tartness of the lemon peel in there. But you can also take...
That sounds yummy.
Oh, yeah. It looks really good from the picture and the reviews. But one of the things I like to do is I save all my peels. And again, I'll throw them in the freezer till I'm ready to use them. But you take the white pithy part off, because that's the bitterness. It has a lot of bitterness in there. But you cut the peels... And then you cook them, and they are very bitter. And so normally what you do is you rinse them off, you put them in boiling water, you bring it to a boil, you drain it, and you do that three times so you can get some of the bitterness out.
Okay.
And then you cook those peels in a sugar syrup until they're kind of translucent. And then you can roll them in fine sugar, or you can just leave them whole. And so then you have a candied citrus peel. And depending on the type of citrus you use, they're fabulous. You can. I have one person was telling me that her boyfriend likes to take it and put it in his tea, and then at the end of it, he'll eat it, because then it'll be even softer.
Right.
You can chop those up. You can put them in muffins and cakes. You can put it in your oatmeal. You can put it in your yogurt. Mm. You can just eat it plain. It's like candy.
Wow.
So you can make candied citrus peels from that.
That is so surprising, because
it's easy.
All these years I've been throwing peels away.
And, you know, recipe calls for citrus zest. Well, you can just pull out a frozen citrus rind and then you can zest it off. You could actually zest it and then dry it, freeze it. You know, once it's not moist, you can put it in the freezer, so you can pull out, you know, a quarter teaspoon or a half a teaspoon of zest. You can do that. And then the thing that people don't think about much is you can actually take the rinds, because sometimes you have way too many to candy and do that with.
Sure.
And so you can actually dehydrate them until they're very dry and grind them into a powder. And so then if you want some citrus flavor, you want to sprinkle some in your oatmeal, you want to put some in baked goods, you can have the citrus flavor with the powder. And so that will give you some extra flavoring there. And then you
can
always...
That's a wonderful tip.
Yeah, save those things. And then you can always make citrus-flavored salt. And so you can take citrus zest and mix it in. I like to use coarse sea salt. And then the salt will pull the moisture from the citrus zest and give you a bright burst of flavor with the citrusy flavor with your salts that you can add to fish and chicken, whatever you want.
Oh, my gosh.
So the citrus, there's a lot of different things you can do with citrus rinds.
I can't believe all these years I've been throwing so much away.
Yeah. Think of all the things that you can make with it.
I know. Yeah. You've got me thinking, that's for sure.
Good. That's our goal. We want people to realize that you can preserve a lot of things that you wouldn't normally think about.
Absolutely. Yeah. Now, the easiest way to find out about your classes mm-hmm. that are free to the public mm-hmm. generally, are they all
unless
free?
Unless it's a make and take.
Okay.
Yeah. For the most part, they're free. Yeah.
And how would they find out more information about that?
We have a Facebook page, so you can just look for Master Food Preservers, and it'll show multiple counties, and we're an amateur Calaveras group. You can also Google Master Food Preservers, amateur Calaveras County, and you'll find us there as well. And we list classes. Our classes, we alternate between Jackson and San Andreas.
Okay.
And so we have the classes there, and we've got a link for each class if people want to register, just so that we know how many people, we've got an idea of how many
right.
people are coming,
right.
and we don't print too many handouts or not
sure.
enough.
Yeah. Sure, well, printing costs have gone up, so,
yep.
you know,
yeah.
having the right amount is
yeah.
great.
Yeah.
Waste not, want not.
That's
no.
right. You're right.
Well, Sue, it's been absolutely delightful. I learned so many new and
great.
Interesting things.
And I learn new stuff all the time.
And I look forward to our next conversation.
So do I. Thank you, Debbie.
So thank you, Sue.
You're welcome. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, hello. This is Debbie Powell and Linda Reevely, and we've got a little section of the show that we'd like to call Seed Catalogs Can Open the Door. And I'm going to ask Linda, why did you think this was so important to include?
Well, I think seed catalogs are probably one of the most hopeful pieces of literature that have ever been published in the whole world. They have beautiful pictures. They have great information. They tell you about new varieties of things you might want to try. They talk about your old trusted friends that you've been growing for years. Seed catalogs are just a great adventure.
I love the way you put it, because as you're flipping through the seed catalog, that's when ideas, it seems like, are generated. I mean, you can find some really interesting varieties. What is that one squash that you grew that I just love, but I can never actually pronounce it?
The squash we grew is called a trombetta or a trombettina. It's an Italian squash variety. You can eat them both as summer squash, and you can let them fully ripen, and they keep all winter long as winter squash. They're very long-necked looking squash with a tan skin when they're fully ripened, orange flesh, and they are delicious. When they're picked green, they're way better than zucchini. They're just yummy. They are also available from renaesgarden.com, which is Renee's shepherd seed that you see in the store, like and locally at Orchard Supply, for instance. Renee's Garden is a seed company started by Renee Shepherd that began many years ago when she started Shepherd Seeds. Apparently, a friend of hers was eating at her home and said, "I don't think American vegetables taste very good." He was from Europe. And she said, "Well, tell me, you know, what's wrong with them?" And he said, "They just aren't very flavorful. We grow much more flavorful varieties in Europe." And she said, "Well, where would I get seeds?" And he said, "Oh, I can give you some addresses." And she began to order seeds primarily from the Netherlands and imported them into the United States and started her own seed company. She sold that seed company, but later on opened another seed company under her first name, Renee Shepherd, Renee's Gardens, where she sells great varieties of seeds that come primarily from European ancestry, although they are pretty much all grown here now. The Renee's is in Felton, California, and so they are a California company. And they have beautiful garden flower seeds as well, and cookbooks.
How fun. That is wonderful. Now, just kind of curious, when do you start collecting your seed catalogs? When do you start ordering your seeds? I mean, I know it can be done all year, but when do you focus on it?
I start ordering catalogs in October and November. They will primarily be published at the end of December and the first part of January. I like to get my seed orders in February, and I like to start some seeds inside under lights on hot mats, warm mats, as early as the end of February. Peppers, tomatoes, sometimes eggplants, I'll start that way.
Oh, great. That is really great.
That way I have good, strong, sturdy plants to put out when it comes time, which around here is, sort of first part to the middle of May.
Oh, good. Well, this wraps up our Seed Catalogs Can Open the Door segment, and we will see you over the garden gate.
Thank you. Bye.